Thank you, Elaine. And thank you, everyone, for coming to the session. I think this is providing a lot of really interesting data on the use of childhood cohorts, and that's going to be obviously continuing with my talk as well. I will be talking about the Princeton School Study as well as the NHLBI Growth and Health Study to examine the role of obesity and blood pressure and also secular trends in blood pressure in relation to the obesity epidemic. By the conclusion of this program, I'm hoping that you'll be able to understand the relationships between blood pressure and obesity during adolescence and childhood, and also to understand how this dramatic increase in obesity levels in adolescence has contributed, or how it plays out in terms of blood pressure. So just a brief overview of my talk. I'm going to start with just a brief overview of assessment of obesity and blood pressure in childhood. I'm sure that this is not news to anybody in particular, but just to make sure that we're all on the same ground in terms of how to measure this in childhood. Talk a little bit about cohort descriptions, and then go into a description of how does blood pressure in childhood relate to BMI. Over time, how do changes in obesity rates affect blood pressure distributions, and also how do blood pressure and obesity development in childhood relate to prospective risk of adult hypertension. So adults are easy. You can hold adults to the same standard across time, which is obesity standards of over 30, BMI, and blood pressure rates over 140, over 90. In children, we know that, or in adults, we know that obesity is a significant risk for high blood pressure. And childhood obesity rates have tripled since the 1970s to the 1990s and to today. So we really wanted to know the relationship between obesity and blood pressure. Is it consistent between childhood and adulthood? And is it consistent between the early 1970s and the 1990s? So this is what I was starting to talk about in the last slide, which is that adults are relatively easy. However, in childhood, both body mass index and blood pressure are expected to increase over time due to age-related growth. And so we have to index both of these measurements in childhood to be able to look across ages and sexes and compare children to each other. So BMI, as you know, is indexed to both age and sex, and blood pressure is indexed to sex and height percentile. With obesity defined as over the 95th percentile, and then in this talk by the fourth report, where hypertension is defined as being over the 95th percentile for age and height percentile. And I just want to demonstrate, because I know that, at least I understand that a lot of people are adult hypertension experts. I'm not a clinician, so I always feel the need to describe things to people who understand them already. but essentially, this is what the 95th percentile looks like in children by the different percentiles of height. And so you can see that, for example, a girl in this case, this is the girl's chart, that a girl who's 10 years old with a systolic blood pressure of 120 may or may not reach the 95th percentile threshold, depending on whether she's short or tall. A tall girl would not actually reach the 95th percentile, while a short girl would. Obviously, there's a lot of power in longitudinal cohorts, and I'll just mention a couple of things here, which is that, in the first place, longitudinal designs are really able to capture that within-person changes that you aren't able to capture in a cross-sectional study. Even a very large cross-sectional study can't capture within-person changes. You can also evaluate adult endpoints in the context of childhood measurements, which, of course, both Elaine and Trudy have highlighted in their talks. Finally, multiple cohorts can be combined to specifically ask questions about secular changes. And this is one of the powers of the I3C consortium that we've all been mentioning, because really the fact that each of these cohorts was collected at a different time, you can start to piece together not only individual progression, but progression over time. So I'd like to introduce you to the Princeton City School District. It's not in New Jersey. It's actually in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've highlighted it here. It's the site of the Princeton School Study, And the population actually is quite stable, and it is very diverse. And so within the context of Cincinnati, it's about 15 miles north of downtown Cincinnati. It encompasses seven different communities and parts of outlying areas of those communities as well. It's both racially and socioeconomically diverse. So in Cincinnati, there are not very many Hispanic or Asian, but in terms of black-white population, it's quite diverse, both racially and socioeconomically. So the Princeton Lipid Research Clinic's study and the follow-up study, which I'll probably be referring to as PFS, was initiated in 1973 or 1974, and the first stage was really a large-scale school-based population. There were over 12,000 individuals enrolled, and this included both children in ages kindergarten through 12th grade, as well as a subsample of their parents. About 6 weeks later, a 15% subsample was recalled to visit two, and that visit included a much broader examination of these children and their parents. In this analysis, I'll be showing you about 1,700 children who were recalled to visit two, and that's where blood pressure assessments were taken. About 25 to 30 years later, between 1999 and 2003, these school children who had been invited to visit two and a later visit three were actually recalled and measured as adults. And the mean age of that group was about 38 at the time for the school children. The other study that I'll be talking about today is the NHLBI Growth and Health Study. The NHLBI Growth and Health Study was initiated in 1987. And actually, there were three different sites for the NGHS. I'll be speaking only about the Cincinnati site, where we enrolled 871 black and white girls, approximately half and half in terms of racial distribution. And they were either age 9 or 10 at enrollment. These girls were followed annually for about 15 years. And then there were two additional visits between the ages of 25 and 28, with the latest visits being in 2007. This study also gathered a variety of different anthropometric, demographic, and lifestyle characteristics. Now, what's interesting about these two studies is that PFS obviously has a very long, much longer follow-up, but they were only measured really once in childhood and once in adulthood, whereas the NHLBI provides an opportunity to look at trajectories across childhood and into adulthood, so they have different strengths. So I'll first look at how are obesity and blood pressure related in childhood. And I'll show you first data from the LRC, which is the Princeton study, where we are looking at the BMI percentile across the bottom and the predicted systolic blood pressure percentile indexed to age and height percentile. And just to orient you, the colored bar at the bottom is an attempt to show you where, so the green is normal BMI, the yellow is overweight, and the red is obese. And what's very interesting about this is that looking at this modeling, both BMI percentile and the square of BMI percentile were significant in this model, which indicates that there's a curvilinear relationship between BMI percentile and systolic blood pressure. And what this implies, if you notice to the left and to the right of the dotted line that I've put in there, is that below the median of BMI percentile, below the 50th percentile, there's not a lot of relationship between BMI and systolic blood pressure in these children. However, once you get to the median, the 50 percentile of the BMI and up, you see that there's a strong linear relationship where each component of BMI percentile relates to an increase in systolic percentile. So that, I thought, was very sort of indicative of the fact that you have this sort of non-relationship among very lean individuals. Here's some similar information that's provided from an NGHS study that was done several years ago looking again, the same coding at the bottom with normal weight, overweight, and obese. And you can see this is roughly linear relationship, but looking at actual body mass index and actual systolic blood pressure, you see in this view, you see that there's actually a relatively linear relationship, and this is only looking at girls at age 11 and 12. So clearly, obesity is related to systolic blood pressure, and whether that's across the whole span of body mass index or whether that really is constrained to the upper 50th percentile and above is really something that needs to be, I think, teased out a little bit more. But I think that there's a strong relationship with body mass index. But another question, as I alluded to before, that we can ask with NGHS, is what is the trajectory of body mass index and blood pressure over time? So using an analytical tool to look at different subpopulations within an overall population that might have different trajectories, we've been able to identify three different trajectories of obesity in this population relative to their probability of developing obesity at certain ages. And you can see that there's a large proportion of children in this cohort, about 77%, who have really almost no probability of obesity during their adolescent years and remain lean throughout the whole time. There's a second group that has an elevated probability of obesity early in the study, but then seem to have an increasing probability as they move through adolescence. And that's about 12% of this population. And then there's another group that is consistently heavy and has nearly 100% probability of being obese throughout the entire study. And so these groupings are very instructive in terms of understanding how these trajectories of obesity may be related to the trajectories of hypertension risk. And so we see that for the persistently lean girls, as a reminder that NGHS is all girls, for persistently lean girls, we see that there are actually two different trajectories of hypertension risk. 90% of the girls fall in this low-risk category, which would make some sense, that there's, they're persistently lean, they have a low risk of hypertension as well. But there's a small group, about 10% of those girls, who seem to have an elevated risk in early to mid-puberty, around age 13 and 14, that then seems to resolve over time. And so there's a subset of those girls who seem to be at risk in mid-puberty. If, however, we look at the group with the increasing probability of obesity during adolescence, we see a different pattern. Again, two trajectories. One, again, is a low-risk trajectory of about 94% of the girls. However, there's about 6% of the girls who have an increasing risk of hypertension at later visits that corresponds roughly to their development of obesity. Finally, the girls that have persistent persistent obesity during adolescence, there are again two different groups of hypertensive risk. Again, there's a very large proportion of low-risk girls. So there's a 95% of those girls actually have quite a low risk of having hypertension at any point. But again, we see a 5% of that group's having this increasing trajectory of hypertension risk during adolescence. And so we can see that from this first section that in adolescence, higher or increasing BMI really is related to a higher odds of high systolic blood pressure. There may be some curve to that relationship, as I mentioned before. And there also may be subgroups who are at risk, and that may be dependent on age. And so we see that there's a large group of low-risk individuals in any of the obesity categories that we saw. But sort of conversely, there may be about 10% of those girls with normal BMI that may have an elevated risk in mid-puberty for hypertension. So what do we know about the secular trends in the obesity and high blood pressure relationship? So I wanted to just remind everybody that this is what the obesity epidemic looks like. The black line represents the data for people age 12 to 19 from NHANES, And the red box here is the actual prevalence of obesity in the LRC cohort. The blue box is the actual prevalence of obesity in the NGHS cohort. And we can see that in both cases, they're somewhat higher than the national average. I don't know why. But you can see that the two groups are quite different in terms of their obesity prevalence. So I'm going to orient you to this graph a little bit to make sure, because there are additional graphs that look very much like this. So this is a cumulative distribution plot looking at LRC as a red curve and NGHS as a blue curve. And in this case, we're looking at BMI percentile. Each point on this graph represents the proportion of individuals in that cohort that has a BMI percentile less than, say, the 50th percentile, which is the median, well, the BMI percentile. So 50th BMI percentile. And so we can see that if you shift it to the right, you actually have a heavier distribution, or on the blood pressure curves that I'll show you in a minute, that would be a higher blood pressure. So shifting to the right is a higher proportion. And you can see clearly here that BMI is higher in NGHS compared with LRC across the whole distribution. It's not just at the top. And this is the 95th percentile, which represents obesity. And so you can obviously see that the prevalence of obesity is higher in NGHS as well, which I just showed you. However, when you look at the cumulative distribution of systolic blood pressure percentiles, a different pattern emerges, where you can see that NGHS is higher than LRC at the lower systolic blood pressure percentiles. But you see they almost overlap for a good part of the distribution, and even at the very highest level, they flip. So that LRC actually has a higher systolic blood pressure at the highest levels. And I'll blow that up to show you the same graph, but just that corner. And you can see that they're nearly identical up to about the 80th percentile, and then LRC shift to the right. And actually, LRC has a higher prevalence of high systolic blood pressure than NGHS does, despite the fact that LRC has about a third of the obesity prevalence of NGHS. The other thing to note in this cohort is that dependent on overweight and obesity status, we can see that the blood pressure curves shift to a greater degree in LRC in relation to obesity and overweight than they do in the NGHS. The shifts in NGHS are more variable. They affect different parts of the distribution. In LRC, you see this uniform shifting by obesity status. And so it seems to be more sensitive to changes in BMI. And we can see that here in this table, which represents the proportions of elevated systolic blood pressure for LRC and elevated systolic blood pressure for NGHS. The ages are a little bit different, LRC slightly younger, but we see that the prevalence of elevated systolic blood pressure is higher at every level of overweight. And we see that the odds ratios for elevated blood pressure in the overweight category in LRC is significant, where it's not, well, it is significant, but not nearly as high in NGHS. Two things to note on this slide. One is that the adjusted odds ratio of having elevated systolic blood pressure in obese individuals is roughly the same for the two cohorts. So that implies that the relationship, the risk associated with obesity is similar across time. But I'd also like to point out that the actual prevalence of high blood pressure in the obese category of NGHS is very similar to the prevalence of high blood pressure in the overweight category for LRC. So the actual percentages are quite different. So this is sort of counterintuitive, right? We see this huge increase in obesity. We see a lot more obese girls in NGHS than we would see in the LRC, and yet very similar or even lower prevalence of elevated systolic blood pressure. So I looked to other cohorts to see if I could find similar relationships, and there were a few different studies that I wanted to highlight. One is that there's not a follow-up of the Princeton, but there was a second cohort that was recruited of third to fifth graders in the same school district as the Princeton study. That was done in 1990, and they were compared to the LRC cohort. Bogalusa Heart Study had produced presented two different analyses of systolic blood pressure and secular changes. And then the Minneapolis blood pressure cohorts, which Julian Steinberger will be talking about next, actually was able to compare the 86 and the 96 cohorts that they have. And so briefly, because I'm nearly out of time, the 1975, so the LRC versus the 1990 cohort, same ages, but they had higher overweight in the 1990 cohort, a non-significant decrease in the prevalence of elevated systolic and a significant decrease in the prevalence of elevated diastolic blood pressure between those two time periods. So basically the same takeaway message that I just presented for LRC and NGHS. And if you notice here, I don't know if you can see it, you almost notice there's a crossing over, similar to what we saw before. In Bogalusa, they were able to look at each of the different time periods that they were able to do the studies, the different panel studies, and they found that over time, even though you see this huge increase in obesity over time, the prevalence of high blood pressure, if anything, decreased over time. And that was true in all of the sex and race groups that they were able to look at. A second study in Bogalusa involves two cohorts that were followed up after 8 years. And so there was an earlier cohort and a later cohort, each of them showing 8-year follow-ups. And what I don't expect you to see all of this slide, but basically what this shows is that in all cases, the later cohort had greater increases in weight over this time period. But in three out of the four groups, white boys, white girls, and black girls, we see that the increases in systolic blood pressure are actually smaller, and often significantly so. Only in black boys did they see an increase in systolic blood pressure. Again, in the Minneapolis cohorts, we see on the right-hand side large increases in BMI between the 1986 and their 1996 cohorts, significant in every age and racial group examined except for Hispanic females. However, despite those large increases in BMI, only white males and black males and black females showed a significant increase in systolic blood pressure. All the other groups either showed no significant increase or even a non-significant decrease in systolic blood pressure during the same period. So we can see from the NGHS and Princeton findings that that NGHS, the later cohort, has significantly higher BMI, higher median systolic blood pressure, which I didn't talk about. So at the middle of the distribution, they were still higher. But the rates of elevated systolic blood pressure were higher at the earlier cohort. There also seemed to be greater sensitivity of blood pressure to changes in BMI and LRC. However, there seems to be evidence, not only from these two cohorts, but from several others, that secular increases in obesity due to the obesity epidemic have not fundamentally changed the distribution of blood pressure in adolescents. I'm going to talk very briefly about two follow-ups in Princeton and NGHS, only to show that adult obesity, as you can see here, actually has a very significant impact on blood pressure. So that's helpful to know that they act like any other adult cohort. And we can see that elevated blood pressure in childhood actually increases the odds of having elevated blood pressure in adulthood. And there were very few NGHS girls who had elevated blood pressure in adulthood. So these estimates are very unstable, but I would highlight them only because they had the opportunity to have more than one elevated blood pressure, and that was significantly higher risk. If we go to these three groups, if you remember the trajectories, how does the trajectories matter? If we group all of the low-risk girls together, the medium risk is the lean girls with the increased hypertension, and the other two were the high risk. What's interesting is that controlling for age and BMI in adulthood, we see that the medium risk girls, so these girls who are lean but had elevated risk of high blood pressure in adolescence, actually had significantly higher systolic blood pressure and diastolic blood pressure in adulthood. I'm suspecting that the high-risk group may have been would have been at higher risk if the BMI in adulthood hadn't been adjusted for. So we can see that elevated systolic blood pressure does seem to carry an independent risk for high adult blood pressure, especially perhaps among those lean adolescents. I'd like to acknowledge John Morrison and Steve Daniels, Elaine Urbina and Charlie Glick, and previous funding. And I'd like to thank you for your time.